you can boil it down to a couple of things. And one of them, I think, is just be as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. Communicate as clearly, as simply as possible. Like, don't add advanced or complicated language. It doesn't really help anyone apart from your own ego. Like, that's something you should get rid of.
I want to say it's even worse when you work in an international company where people might not even understand some of those fancy words, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Product Board Engineering Leadership Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Engineering Leadership Podcast by Product Board. My name is Robin Pokorny, and I'm your host. I'm a senior staff engineer here at Product Board. And as you can hear, I'm not Joshua, who was the host in the previous season. We took a small liberty in the name of engineering leadership, in the name of the podcast. And while the previous season was more focused on engineering management and how directors work, we would like to now look more into technical leadership and staff engineering and staff plus engineering, and how people in these leadership roles, what they do, what days look like. And I think it's going to be very interesting because staff plus roles are rarely well understood. Each company sees them very differently. Different staff plus engineers have different areas of focus and ways of working. And also the career frameworks are wake for these roles. So let's see what the Staff Plus engineers actually do. With me today, I have Ralph McTaggart, a principal engineer here at Product Board. Welcome, Ralph.
Yeah, thanks so much. And 10 out of 10 for your pronunciation of my name. Well done. That was good going. Thanks.
Thank you. Been practicing. So, Ralph, you live in Ireland, right? You work remotely. So I think it's important to say that because that, I guess, impacts your ways of working. Can you maybe quickly tell us how long have you been at Product Board? And then we can look at your previous career.
Yeah, sounds good. So I've been at Product Board for around about 5 months now, maybe mm-hmm. a little less. I started in September of 2022. So I've been ramping up. I was thrown in the deep end and I've been ramping up since then.
Okay, nice. You joined as a principal engineer, and I understood that you were principal engineer in your previous role where you grow into that. Can you maybe tell me more about the step when you decided, you know, I'm a senior engineer and I don't want to become a manager, so I became the next step?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is interesting for me. So I actually was a manager for a while. I went through the usual, I started like as a senior ish engineer in my last place. I was there for 8 years, wow. A lifetime in tech, right? You know, people stay for like a year, 2 years now, a lot of the time move on. So yeah, I went to a lead engineer. I was an engineer manager role. I didn't have the title as such, mm-hmm. but I was a manager for one team. And then eventually a team of 12, the team got huge. We split that team into two. And then that's why I was more of like a manager of managers at that point.
Oh, wow.
And I really enjoyed it. I love a lot of the management role. I think, you know, some of the skills you get from that are super valuable, and I still use those today. I'm so glad of it. But I did realize I've always loved the tech. Like, the reason I get up in the morning is because, and the reason I look forward to, like, maybe not commuting to work because I don't do that anymore, but like the reason I look forward to, you know, opening up the laptop in the morning is because of the cool stuff like that you can build, right? So as much as I'm an introvert, but I get on with people, I enjoy like conversations with us, I enjoy them. Sometimes I find them exhausting, but I enjoy them. But what really motivates me, like what makes me want to do well in my career and where I get like satisfaction, is the tech, right? So like that is what drove that decision for me, where I told my old boss that, look, as much as I enjoy the people management side of things, I want to make sure that I stay grounded in the technical side. And let's face it, as you well know, when you get to the level that we're kind of at in a technical way, you still do a lot of the good bits of management too. At least good is obviously subjective, but good in my opinion. So like a lot of the mentoring and blah, 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 which I'm sure we'll talk about later.
Yeah, cool. That's nice. Can we maybe go back to the moment? Like you had to tell your boss, like, look, I would like to switch tracks. Was it even an option in your old job, or did you have to invent this?
Yes, it was an option. We had a technical track. It was a relatively new thing. It developed, actually. There was another person in my company who was actually a couple who had similar musings, basically. And that technical track developed while I was in a lead position, like a management position. And that I brought up to my boss, was like, look, I want to do the same thing here. I want to move laterally and stay in the technical side. To be honest, I was very close with my old boss. He's a really good guy. I still, I have a lot of respect for him. He knew deep down, I think he knew that, like, I was a technical person. Even when I was managing people management, I was very involved in a lot of the technical discussion, still very hands-on, still coded a lot and all that sort of thing. So I think he knew deep down that the conversation was coming. I think from his perspective, he needed a manager. And I was like, I don't want to blow my own trumpet too much, but I was pretty good at the management side too. So he was like, well, you can do this. So, like, you know, why don't you step into this role? But I think we both knew. It wasn't like, I don't think he was caught off guard that, like, oh wow, you want to be a principal engineer? I wasn't expecting this. Like, I think he knew it was coming.
Okay, that's interesting. I ask because I know that it's not that common. Like, I believe that managers, you know, they exist in every organization. Like, that's kind of a function of the size of the company. But for staff plus engineering, I think it's a decision if the company wants that kind of people in the organization. Yeah. So I'm glad to hear that your old company had that. I'm actually very interested about this transition because I don't know that many people who transition from, let's say, director role to principal engineer. How was that? Like, how was your relationship with your colleagues different?
Yeah, so I think in a lot of ways, I was a principal engineer. To be honest, I probably just did both roles at once. Like I said, my boss, but also like the people that surrounded me. You know, I was a manager of people in practice, but or kind of in theory, but in practice, I was still very much driving technical initiatives. I was still very hands-on. So, like, I don't think it was surprising to anyone. It's something that definitely evolved for me, and it's maybe not something that I expected. And I would imagine people listening to this, there's probably going to be people that are saying, look, I'm not sure where I want to land on that spectrum of things. And this is something I think we should talk about too, is that it's not necessarily like you are a manager or you are an individual contributor. It can be that, but oftentimes you're somewhere along that spectrum of things, and your title may be one or the other, but like your responsibilities and what you do day to day may kind of bleed into one side or the other.
I see. But still, you asked to change that, right?
Yes.
So what was different after you stopped being a manager? Did you have more time? Was it more about, like, what was the different thing that you saw immediately or like after a few weeks?
So, yeah. So I definitely had more time. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any people management responsibilities. So all of my administrative work that I had, which if you think about it, I had two teams basically that reported into me. By the time I turned principal, I was a manager of managers. So I basically only had my two reports, but I still had a lot of one-on-ones. I still had, like, you know, basic administrative stuff like this person wants to go on holiday and is that fine and whatever, like just tick a box or whatever. There was all that sort of stuff, right? But yeah, when I switched to principal, I definitely got that time freed. I felt like, to be honest, I felt like a bit of a weight was lifted because I kind of felt like I was home in a sense. Like, this is the role that I've been looking for a long time, and I just maybe didn't realize it. And one thing that changed in a practical sense was that my boss was like, okay, well, you don't have the responsibilities of the team anymore, and like the teams basically that, and you know what they work on, but you need to be accountable to large technical initiatives. So let's get you involved and make sure that your things that you were maybe working on before, that you are basically where the buck stops now on certain parts of that. And that was definitely a mental shift for me. It was something I had to get accustomed to, but it was something I was excited about because it's like these huge technical things, and I now am responsible for. I can like literally change the direction of, you know, with the click of a button or whatever, you know, it was exciting as well for me.
Nice, that's cool. I'm interested because when you were in the manager position, you had a formal authority, right? And in a way, you could directly decide things. And I'm not saying that you should, and people should do it often, but you could. While being a tech lead, this changes and you have to kind of influence people. Did you notice this? Like, was there a moment where you said, oh, I wish I had the authority to actually make people do what I want? Or
there's an element to this. So for one point, I'll challenge you a little bit. I think oftentimes people that are in individual contributor roles that aren't in management feel like they maybe don't have the decision making capabilities when they actually do, if you really drill into it. So I'll challenge that aspect.
Okay.
But I do get your point too. So there was, we were moving towards a federated graph, similar to what we have here at Product Board, GraphQL Federation using the Apollo framework or whatever. We were moving towards that in my last company, and it involved a lot of people, and I wasn't necessarily in a position of, you know, power, I guess, to say that this is what we'll do now. It was partly because of my role changing, but also partly because it was greater than just my area that I worked in. It was literally company-wide. So I had to kind of go out and almost do like a, basically advocate for change across the company.
Yes.
Had to basically act like a salesman or whatever for like this new approach that we're going for. What does it mean technically? Sell it to our engineering directors and above, and then sell it to the rest of the company too, because obviously product design, we're going to have some impact on, you know, it was going to affect them as well. So that was definitely something that was a challenge. It wasn't something that I maybe would have had to have done before, but it's something that I think if you enjoy that sort of thing, then principal engineering or staff plus engineering is absolutely for you. And I like that kind of, again, because the tech drives me. And I feel like if I've got a good solution for something, or I have an interesting problem to solve, if I can get other people involved in that and move the conversation along, like that's something that motivates me. And it's a great part of the job, to be honest.
I see. Yeah, it sounds pretty cool. That brings me to another question I have, which I think is tricky. And that is, how do you measure your success? You know, you say, I like to do these things. But one of the problems at Staff Plus Engineering is like, these things take time. Yep. How do you know you are on the right track? How do you know that you are doing good stuff? And how do you, you know, sell it to your manager that what you're doing actually makes sense?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it's, just as you pointed out, it's really difficult to answer. So I think for me, and this comes back to one of the most important things that a staff plus or principal, whatever engineer should do, an individual contributor at this kind of level, you need to have a strong partnership with your management peers. So your director or senior director, VP, SVP of engineering that you work closely with. And I've had that and I continue to have that here. And it's those people that I think act almost as a barometer to whether you're influencing in the correct way. And they, you know, they can give you direct feedback, and you know, oftentimes you report into them, but I consider them more like a partner, somebody that you work alongside, and they keep you in check, and they'll bring problems to you that you have to solve, or that you have to, you know, delegate or help other people solve or whatever. And they'll give you feedback as well based on how successful that has gone. Now, obviously, in terms of, to come back to your question, you have to be, you want to track that yourself too. You can't just rely on everyone else. I think part of it is just being self-aware as well. And that's a skill too. As you probably know, like it doesn't always come naturally to people. I think especially people that are engineers, there's maybe a tendency for people in this kind of career to not have that self-awareness. It's something that really needs to be developed and be reflective and make sure that, like, put the ego aside and realize, like, am I doing what I'm being asked of? Or am I doing what I think is right because I have a bit of an ego, because I feel like I'm pretty smart because I'm a software engineer.
Okay.
And, you know, like, you have to put all that to the side, I think. That's, so it's about being reflective too.
Yeah, I have so many questions to that. But the first one is, like, do you think that the title itself changes that? Like, I know you shouldn't probably pull the rank, but just knowing that, you know, you have that position, you are able to influence that. Do you think that gives you more confidence in you? And I agree it can lead to overconfidence, but have you felt this? Like,
yeah, I feel like I definitely have confidence that comes with the role.
Yeah.
I get that. I think the fact that I had to work hard to get the principal engineer in my last place, and principal engineer, and we can talk about this too, was slightly different in my last place to here, but I had to work really hard to get there. And I feel like once I got there, it was like, okay, well, I deserve to be here because I absolutely put the work in. Now, in saying that, it's completely normal to have imposter syndrome. And I do have imposter syndrome here at Product Board at times where I'm just like, why did they hire me? Like, you know, like, I don't know this stuff. But that's completely natural too. So, yeah, I think there's definitely a balance.
I see. That was exactly my question, because when you said that you have to be humble and you have to do this self-awareness, it's very easy for it to, you know, go down into the imposter syndrome and like really feeling that you shouldn't be there. So you say you feel it here, you felt it before, I assume.
Yeah.
Well, what's your strategy? How do you put yourself back and give yourself the confidence?
So I'm pretty lucky, to be honest. I have a good network of people in Product Board and outside of Product Board, in Ireland and outside of Ireland, that I would talk with regularly, who would give me feedback, you know, peers in industry that I talk about these things with. And I think it's super important to talk about these things. Like, I don't necessarily feel it all of the time, but when it does creep up, I will reach out to somebody and I'll chat to somebody and just be transparent. And whether it's you or me, the other person will grind that person and say, like, look, you're here because you're really good at what you do, and you were chosen to do this role for a particular reason. And yes, there's things you don't know. It's fine not to know things. You work it out. If you can't work it out alone, there's lots of people here that will help you. Like, I'm here, you're here, whatever. You know, it's not a huge deal. So I think you need a reminder every once in a while, and having a network of people and being open about it and being transparent is how you kind of get past those things.
Mm-hmm. When you mentioned this network, do you also maybe follow some blogs or go to some meetup regarding this? Can you maybe recommend something?
Outside of Ireland, I probably can't, unfortunately. So, like, I'm a huge fan of Hacker News.
Okay.
And this comes up quite a bit on Hacker News for anyone who doesn't follow. I'm assuming most people would, but this comes up on Hacker News quite a bit. There's a subreddit I occasionally go on to called Experienced Devs as well. It's just for, like, more senior devs. For anyone who goes on Reddit, there's CS Career Questions, which is horrendous. It's like a real toxic community of, like, mostly students that think they've worked it all out. But Experienced Devs is a bit more grounded, and you see conversations like this come up. So I guess a lot of it comes from, you know, just online stuff too, like reading around the topic. But for me personally, I just have a close network of people. And again, you know, there's more and more of those people in Product Board now that I've been here for quite a while. I feel like there's people I can talk to and trust, and I would do the same for them. And there's a lot of people back in Belfast and around all of Ireland, actually, that I've worked with in the past, or we have pretty regular meetups and conferences in Ireland too. And again, these kind of things come up, and for good reason. Like, we all know what imposter syndrome is, but it's important that it keeps coming up because people keep suffering from it, and it's something that should be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's important to say as well, for a lot of people it comes up more. Like, if you're a woman in tech, like, it's gonna come up more, because unfortunately there's, like, a diversity problem in tech, and you're going to be more inclined to feel that imposter syndrome because of the unconscious or conscious bias that comes with the industry, right? So yeah, it's something that absolutely should come up and will come up.
That's a nice topic you bring up. I remember I really liked the book by Kim Scott called Just Work. I'm not sure if you heard about that. She writes about these biases. And one thing I really like then is that unconscious bias is kind of natural. It's there, we can acknowledge it, but then you can have ways how you can check yourself that you are not subject to that. Yeah. And I really like that. And I did take some of these advices in the book. So I recommend that to people who maybe want to know more about that.
Cool.
Let's talk about your day-to-day work, right? So how does your calendar look like?
I had a New Year's resolution now that we're in 2023. I had a New Year's resolution of fixing my calendar and making sure that I had more focus time. I've been relatively good with that, but to be honest, a lot of my calendar is still meetings and still trying to, you know, like I'm relatively new here in Pradhanpur too, I guess. So part of it is still getting the lay of the land, especially at a principal engineer level. You kind of need to know a bit of everything. So I kind of, you know, I'm a newbie to lots of different areas. So I still try and reach out as much as possible. If I have some free time, I try and reach out to some area of the business or some area of engineering that I haven't got the touch yet, and try and make some time to learn and find out more. So I still have aspects of that. And then, of course, you are, as the topic of this podcast, you are a leader. You know, it may not be a leader in the management sense, but you do lead people. So you have to meet, like there has to be, you know, whether it's more technical conversations or more strategic and planning conversations, I have to be involved in them at some level. Mm-hmm. So my day-to-day, to answer your question more specifically, I usually have a mix of planning and maybe more tactical meetings. Mm-hmm. And then I usually have one or two big strategic pieces that I'm working on. Like one we're dealing with a product board at the minute is the consistency of our data, which you're well aware of. And that's something I'm looking into. So I spend a good bit of my day looking through that problem, trying to understand what technical components that will affect and how we manage that and mitigate some of the side effects that come with that. So that's definitely a large part of my job. I would say in my last role, I coded a lot more mm-hmm. than I do now. The principal role, again, slightly different, but you know, that's something I hope will change over time. Like I do like to get very hands-on, and you know, I'm the only principal engineer here at Product Board, which does complicate things a little bit, because if we had another one or another two or whatever, and you've come on, you're senior staff and you're super capable. So like, I feel like now we can split that work up a little bit, right? And it gives me a little bit more time to get more hands-on with certain aspects. So yeah, I would say it's a mix of meetings and strategic stuff, architectural diagramming, writing documentation, and a little bit of coding and more hands-on stuff.
I would like to go talk more about the coding. What kind of coding would it be? Would it be like production code? Would it be proof of concepts? Or would it be some framework stuff? Or what kind of coding you would like to do? Or maybe just some bugs so you are kept in touch with the code?
Yeah, so I think it needs to be a mix for a principal. I think you need to have the time carved out in your calendar to explore, right? Mm-hmm. And that's exploring the existing code base, but it's also playing around with like what technologies are emerging, what, you know, database options have you got for mm-hmm. whatever. Yes. And I think you just have to carve out that time. So at the minute, I'm playing about with stuff more than I'm dealing with the our current mm-hmm. code base, and mm-hmm. that's just the nature of the way mm-hmm. that the work has fallen. Mm-hmm. So I'm playing about with a couple of different databases, whatever, investigating whatever, but it's something that kind of changes over time, and that's an important point for staff plus in mm-hmm. general, I think, is that you have to be flexible. You have to kind of roll with the punches a wee mm-hmm. bit, because mm-hmm. you are a strategic leader mm-hmm. of a sense. Yes, it's technical strategy, but it is a leader, so you have to roll with what the business needs to. So you have to be smart with your time, and you have to kind of deal with whatever comes up. You have to be prepared for that. So you kind of go with the flow a little mm-hmm. bit mm-hmm. to an extent anyway.
I see. What about delegation? What's your approach to delegation? I mean, I assume you have to delegate. You cannot do everything yourself.
Yeah.
Is there something that maybe worked for you in the past job or?
Yeah. So I'm a huge advocate, and this is because it's been done to me. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge advocate of propping other people up. Mm-hmm. So where I can delegate, I absolutely will. I think it's important as well. This is, again, it's a management thing too, but it is an icy thing. You have to make sure that the person can stretch themselves and they're capable at the same time without being setting them up for failure, right? So I think that can sometimes be a fine line, but absolutely, like I would delegate where possible. Mm-hmm. I think what's important is that the people that you're working with or delegating to, that they feel safe and secure. So you have to make sure that, again, that they have those boundaries that they can work within. And part of that is just the role in general. Like when we see that at Product Board, like we're trying to define some of the safer environment and areas and the engineering guidelines and principles at a high level in a way that secures people that work within those to feel they can work securely and safely, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But also completely autonomously. Like yes. You want to give that people that autonomy. So yeah, I absolutely delegate. I think it's important to do that. As you say, you can't do everything yourself. And I'm kind of at that level now where I have to be smart about what I take on. I think for me as well, a large part of the role comes down to showing that you can take the initiative to mm-hmm. take something. And if you lead by that example, whenever you delegate to somebody else, you would expect that they'll do the same. Like they'll step up and they'll be like, yeah, 100%. Like maybe I'm a staff engineer and this is more of a senior staff task or whatever. But like if it helps me grow and I see Ralph do it and I see Robin do it, then I'll do it too. Okay. You know? I think from like a culture perspective, like, nice. That's important too.
All right. I really like what you say. And I still have one question regarding the job you take on. Is that there will always be so many things you can work on, right? There will be so many fires to fight. How do you kind of decide, like, or do you have some maybe formal or semi-formal approach not to spread yourself too thin and not to say yes to everything that comes by?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I think this is something that comes with experience. I think you kind of, you start to get to know this, and this is what it means to be a staff plus engineer too. You have to have messed up a couple of times, right? Yeah, you have to have taken on too much at some point and realized I am way over my head. I've got way too much on. Certain stuff is going to slip, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure that I can say, well, here's a prescription mm-hmm. for you that if you do this and follow these steps, you'll never be spread too thin. I think it's something that comes with experience and that intuition. I don't think it's something that you are born with. I think mm-hmm. it's something that you practice and you get better at, and the role teaches you, the people around you teach you, and it's something that you just develop over time. I think I am super mindful of it. I don't ever want to be in a position where I can't make significant change in the company. So I probably default to no more than yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's kind of worked pretty well for me. The one thing I would say is that when you're new to a company, or at least whenever I was new to Product Board, I felt like, again, maybe this is imposter syndrome too, but I kind of felt like I had to step up. So I probably started to take mm-hmm. on too much mm-hmm. just to, because I wanted to get stuck into, and I was keen, right? I wanted to make sure that that I impressed in the new job, and I just wanted to do stuff and see, like, let people see that I bring value to Product Board. And that's something that, you know, when you're new to a job, I think it's probably just an insecurity again and whatever.
Yeah.
But the experience, like, I've been doing this for a long time now, and you kind of, you realize over time that that's probably not the way to go a lot of the time.
I see, yeah.
And you see it, and I'm sure you've seen it too, where you see like senior engineers over a promise and you're kind of like, I've had these conversations quite a lot with people. I pull them to the side and say like, look, what you've just done or what you're about to do may not be the mm-hmm. best choice. Think about it. Here's how I would deal with it. And, you know, just be careful.
Yeah. I was asking about this method because I didn't want to prime you. For me, it was important when I read this book called Make Time by Jake Knapp and Jordan Zaratsky. And they have some beautiful advice there. One of the things they mentioned, and I follow from that on is that you have this like front burner and back burner analogy, and you kind of say, I will have two projects on the front burner, you know, up to two projects, and the rest is back burner. And you have to make these decisions. And I actually do that in my Notion. Like I have projects and I say these two on the top, these are the front burner, and everything else is back burner. So when you said you have like two projects or two topics to work on, I was thinking if you do this maybe unconsciously as well, or if you have some method in that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I really like that approach. It's not something that I'm doing consciously, but that makes a lot of sense to me. I can see the logic in that, and that's really interesting.
Okay, nice. Let's talk about one more thing you said. It was about writing documents. I believe that a lot of time you spent individually working, your output is a document or a diagram, right? Mm-hmm. Did you work on this skill, or how did you find it that you have to produce these documents?
Yeah, my mom was an English teacher, and she was super challenging to me whenever I was a kid about like my grammar and how I communicate. So I think some of that was maybe through her. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. Like I'm a huge fan of communication just in general, and I know you are too. It's a really important skill. It's not something you're born with, I'm convinced. Mm-hmm. I think this is nurture over nature, and it's something you can absolutely develop. I've read a lot of books on writing prose, writing nonfiction as well. I can't name any off the top of my head, but there's a couple that I'll send on and we'll stick it in the show notes or whatever that I would absolutely recommend. You can boil it down to a couple of things. And one of them, I think, is just be as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. Communicate as clearly, mm-hmm. as simply as possible. Like, don't add advanced or complicated language. It doesn't really help anyone apart from your own ego. Like, that's something you should get rid of.
I want to say it's even worse when you work in an international company where people might not even understand some of those fancy words, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the other thing I was going to say is that whenever you communicate in any way, and that could be talking at a conference, but documentation very much so, especially at the level we're talking about, is you got to think about the audience, like who is going to consume this. It's not about you trying to show how much you understand how Kubernetes works. It's about what is the person trying to take away from this, and make sure that you're delivering to that audience all the time. And if you read a lot of these books, or you listen to podcasts, or you watch videos about presenting, it usually distills to those two points and some variations, right? But it's mostly those two points. And to answer your question, it's something I've practiced. It's not something that comes intuitively. It's something I continue to practice, something I continue to read about and learn about. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a critical skill. It's not just a primary skill. It's a critical skill when it comes to staff plus principal type engineering. Absolutely.
Okay, nice. Let's talk about one thing. In the past, there was a role called architect in many companies. Mm-hmm. I believe that now there are not that many people who would have this role or even title, and it's somehow taken over by staff plus engineers. Do you see this shift, and what do you think? Like, is it a good one? And maybe what is the difference in the role of architect as you see it versus principal engineer?
Yeah, so architect can still exist, right? It can still be a completely valid and normal role. I think what you're pointing to is the ivory tower architect problem, which was really common. I'm not going to name companies, but there's a lot of big companies that did this in the late 90s, early 2000s, even into the 2010s. And people that decide what direction the company's going in without having any hands-on experience or having any on-the-ground contact are never going to make good decisions. And I think that type of architect will never work. Mm-hmm. I think, to your point, the IC track, or whatever you want to call it, that's developed in more recent years, a lot of it down to like Will Larson and staff engineering book and certain companies adopting those strategies, is that there are alternatives now. And one of those alternatives is still an architect. Like, you can still be, and I think pretty sure he calls it out actually in his book as an archetype for staff engineer, as the architect who delivers for some area strategic value. Mm-hmm. But the difference is that an architect that's going to be useful mm-hmm. and an architect that's going to be valuable is going to be an architect that knows what the on-the-ground problems are and communicates with engineers, ideally is hands-on and writes some code or at least deals with the infrastructure at some level. We don't really have a formal architect role here in product mm-hmm. board. It's the IC track that kind of covers it. But I don't think the title really matters that much. It's more about what does it mean in practice. And unfortunately, back in the day, the title just happened to correspond to people that weren't hands-on. And we saw lots of terrible decisions off the back of that.
Okay. So what's your approach to architecture? You know, what even is architecture? Because many times I speak with people about Staff Plus positions or people who aspire to be in there, they often mention the word architecture. So how much is architecture part of your job and what does it mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. Architecture is a huge part of my job. I guess it's the passion that mm-hmm. I get. It comes back to the tech that kind of drives me. Like the strategic planning is super important and it's interesting, but actually building this stuff, like mm-hmm. putting the components together, understanding how we handle resiliency and all that is what motivates my find. It's really interesting, like mm-hmm. the engineering side. So yeah, it's something that is vital in Staff Plus engineering. I think one thing that should be called out here is that just because you're not a staff engineer doesn't mean that you're not involved in architecture. I think it's just usually that the balance is different. And this comes back to what we mentioned at the start. Like I will happily put my ego to the side and ask a junior engineer, like, how would you approach this architecture problem? Like, you know, we've got ingestion issues with these queues or whatever. Yes. Like, how would you handle this? Because, you know, everybody has some input and everybody has different approaches and perspectives. And you know this as well. There's usually not a correct answer.
Yes.
There's like a slightly better answer than other answers, but you're always trading stuff off, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, for most principal engineers, it's going to be a strong, relevant part of mm-hmm. their main job description. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's something that I love about the job, and I hope my job continues to be largely about like the architecture, the moving parts, and the process that comes with the architecture as well, because, you know, the architecture obviously reflects an organization and vice versa, as mm-hmm. most people know. Like that's a super interesting problem as well.
What about people who want to grow in their careers, but they don't feel they would like to be in the leadership position? That can mean either management or what we talk here about, let's say, Staff Plus engineering. Do you think that organizations are ready for these people? And what should they do? Should they try to develop leadership skills or focus on the, let's call it true IC?
Yeah. So this comes back to the archetypes mm-hmm. thing, I think, from like Will Larson's book. Mm-hmm. So I'll be honest with you first, mm-hmm. right? Most companies are not prepared for ICs that aren't a very particular type of IC. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be an easier transition to an IC that is strong in soft skills and has a certain way about them. But a lot of companies, and more companies actually, are supportive of people that want to develop, but not necessarily develop into a leader IC, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And those different archetypes, do exist, where you have the solver and all this, that, you know, they absolutely do exist and the personalities exist. But one thing I would recommend for anyone is, even if you feel like you want, I know people like this too. So even if you feel like you want to just be really deep mm-hmm. and really like a really narrow focus, I would still recommend to polish the other skills, like still work on the soft skills. Don't let them just rust over time, and it will pay off because it keeps doors open. And also, inevitably, you will have some level of having to be good at communicating or, you know, all of these other skills. So I don't think you should ever pigeon yourself too much, because it's, you know, it's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to do you any favors,
yeah,
if I'm honest. And you know, management in every company, they're trying their best, hopefully, to understand the options and understand people's motivations. But managers are people too. Mm-hmm. and they'll get some stuff wrong, and they'll not always find the best path. So it does take you as an individual to be responsible for your own career, for your own path, and understanding like, well, is this what I want to do, and what are the steps that would take me to that kind of role that I'm after? And working with management as well to carve that out. Like I said, in my last place, I worked with my management to kind of get a role that was, you know, and every principal role is different, but get a role that suited my skills and suited what I was motivated by.
We talk a lot about the soft skills for Staff Plus engineers here. And I think that sometimes is, you know, people might think it's only about the soft skills. And while I agree, it's a lot about them, you need to have some hard skills as well.
Yep.
What would be your recommendation? Like, what hard skills you think are absolutely essential for somebody trying to be in Staff Plus role?
Yeah, so for me, it's hard to beat the basics, if I'm honest. So, like, I'm actually quite surprised. I've done a lot of interviews, a lot of interviews, like hundreds of technical interviews of people at this level. And I'm sometimes surprised by how many people let the fundamentals go. Don't get me wrong. I don't expect, and I wouldn't ever want somebody in an interview to traverse a binary tree in an optimized way. Like, that's not super important. But I do feel like understanding the basics of data structures, understanding the fundamentals of databases and sharding and replication and all of those things, it can't be emphasized enough that those will always be relevant, right? So I think for me, yes, I have pretty deep technical knowledge, at least I like to think I do in certain aspects of engineering and computer science. And I hone those, and a large part of it comes down to just having an interest. And then there's other topics that I just have a vague interest in, or even maybe some academic background in, AI, machine learning, and all that sort of stuff. But I will make a point of going back to the basics, understanding the fundamentals of the things basically you're taught in university and like in your early years as an engineer. I'll revisit them, make sure I understand them. And I think it can't be emphasized enough that it's really important, because you have to remember as well, you're going to not only use those skills in a different way at a higher level, but you'll have to be able to mentor and talk on the same level as people that have that as like really fresh knowledge, because they're dealing with it day to day, or they were dealing with it not that long ago in university or whatever. So I think, revisiting the fundamentals for me. And of course, when it comes to anything, so I play a lot of snooker, but it's the same as like golf or whatever, right? You're only as good as your worst shot, right? In a lot of ways. So if you let large parts of your skill set kind of rust and degrade, I don't think that's a good thing as a principal engineer or Staff Plus engineer. I think you should work on your weaknesses, bring the bottom up, and not worry as much about the strengths. I think the strengths will just come with your motivation and with your day-to-day, right?
Nice. Okay. Do you ever see yourself going back to management?
I would never rule it out. I mentioned earlier that I got a lot of satisfaction from managing people. I get on well with people. I wouldn't rule it out, but it would probably need to be the right management role, because like I said before, it's the technical conversations that drive me. If you ever see me in a technical conversation, which you have, and you'll see plenty of when we're working together, like I get into it. That's what gets me going. And, you know, let's talk about this and let's all sit in a room and work it out. And I find it hard to imagine getting the same buzz. This is literally like a buzz. It's almost like an adrenaline rush from going through that process in a management type way. I don't really get the same, and lots of people do. I've seen it in conversations here. We did a reorganization here not that long ago, and you could see a lot of the managers here getting super excited about certain aspects of like what that means for the teams and this. And I find it interesting, and it's, you know, it's exciting in a way, but it doesn't get me like pumped, you know, which maybe sounds weird, but I find it hard to imagine getting that same thrill from a management role.
I was asking because my idea was like, is Staff Plus Engineering what you want to do till the end of your career? Or should people, or you even imagine you would move around, maybe going more hands-on into a team eventually? You also mentioned that the position itself is different in different companies. Yeah. But is this something you would like to be doing in 5, 10 more years?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I've thought about this quite a lot, and I'm not sure I know the answer. I think I probably would say yes to some extent. Mm-hmm. May not be called principal engineer, but like you see, like Daniel here, our CTO, right? Mm-hmm. Daniel is still very much involved. He still has those great conversations. I can tell. I don't know him that well. Like I've got to know him over the past few months, but I get the impression that he gets a buzz off those conversations too, and I can see certain aspects of our personalities that are similar. So like there's certain roles that you have like distinguished engineer and you have whatever else, you call them different things, but I could see myself developing just more of the same, you know, an example of product board is the company's scaling up, it's getting more successful, we add more engineers, the role changes, but you know, the general idea is the same, like we're going to have hard technical challenges that we're going to have to solve in a broad way, solve in a deep way. And yeah, like I can see myself getting involved in those conversations and just loving it until, you know, I retire. I'll just retire in 5 years' time. You know, hopefully win the lottery or something. I'll retire in 5 years. But no, I can see myself doing that for a long time.
Okay, that's good to hear. I want to ask you about working remotely. Did you work remotely in your previous job as well, or is this new to you now?
So obviously. Worked remotely during the pandemic, and after the pandemic, in my previous job, I worked mostly remote. So it was it was hybrid, but I was in the office. I think maybe once every 2 weeks, something like that. But that's still different, I think, to work in basically fully remote, which I do now. I come to Prague or I visit the product board offices, but. For 99% of my time, I'm remote, and that's definitely different.
How do you find it? Like, what is challenging?
I love it. To be honest, I think yes, there are challenges with it. I think it's important, and product board's really good at this. It's important to be conscious of remote colleagues, and you know this because you're in Berlin too. Like, the company needs to be, and to be honest, like this is something I think companies should do in general. But the company needs to be aware that people are remote and have that kind of remote first culture. But in all honesty, I think if they're doing that anyway, there's a lot of benefits that come for the people that are in the office. Like, you know, you make sure this stuff is like communicated and it's async and Slack so that people can catch up on conversations and blah, blah, blah. Stuff just doesn't just happen at the coffee machine and then it's kind of like a rumor mill as things get, you know, sent around. Like, I think it's important to have those principles anyway. Yes, it's brilliant for us as remote employees, but it's still just as relevant for people that are in the office and weren't sitting at the coffee machine whenever it happened. Like, I think a lot of the principles that come from remote working can definitely be applied. In terms of me personally, I enjoy the freedom. I've got two young kids. I know you've got a kid as well. And I think that flexibility for me is useful. I'm living in Ireland. I'm actually moving to Wales, but I love where I live. I love the surroundings I'm in, the people that are around me. But then sometimes you have companies like Product Board where there's these amazing opportunities. And, you know, the only way that was ever going to work unless I moved to Prague was to join remotely. Yes. So, it's worked out super well. And I'm really happy I made the move.
Nice. You've been in the office several times, you said, right? Yep. In Berlin. You know, I think that if we compare Ireland and the Czech Republic, there's one common thing, at least one, and that is beer, right? Do you drink beer, and have you seen how these two cultures approach beers differently?
So I don't drink. So I'm a sober.
It's maybe even better to have these like a observer of that.
So like I consider myself I'm a sober Irishman. So I'm I guess that's an oxymoron. or maybe just a moron. I don't know. I don't drink. I do drink. a whiskey every couple of months. But yeah, there's definitely, this is funny, right? Because I don't know whether it's because of the drinking culture or whatever, but like the personalities and the, what we would call in Ireland, the crack, the humor is actually really similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Czech Republic and Ireland, and actually I would say the UK in general. So like whenever I come here, I feel at home in a sense that the people are really friendly. The humor, the way that we interact is very, very similar. I would say that Czech people probably don't hold back as much. They're okay. Probably more like transparent and more like brutally honest. Like if you're not doing something right, Irish people are maybe a little bit, they'll talk around it a bit. But yeah, no, the cultures are different in beautiful ways, but also so familiar. Like the Czech culture is really familiar in a lot of ways. It's cool.
It's funny you say it because I immediately remember that so many British TV shows are hugely popular in the Czech Republic, and the shows that maybe people don't even know about outside, you know, like Red Dwarf or Father Ted, Bone the Python. It's like it has a huge community here in the Czech Republic, people who follow that.
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
When I meet the people here, it makes sense. Like they would absolutely get that humor. Yeah.
That's great. I'm glad that you fit in so well. Thank you, Ralph, for coming here. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Sarah. I appreciate the time, and thanks so much for being such a graceful host. I enjoyed it. It was awesome. My first podcast experience, hopefully, was useful to people. It was awesome.
I hope so as well. If you have thoughts about that, if you would like to ask something either to the podcast or Ralph, you can reach out to us. You can write us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you use. We love those. I would like to say that we are hiring at Product Board at Staff Plus positions. If this feels interesting to you, go to our website and try to find that. You can reach out to us with more questions. We can talk about this. And with that, thank you, and hope to hear you. Well, hope you will hear us next time. Goodbye.